Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM, and we are continuing our look at the book Mormon Enigma, Emma Hale Smith, written by Linda King Newell and Valeen Tippetts Avery, a book that received an award from Brigham Young University after it came out in the 1980s, but because of its controversy, the two authors were actually banned for a time from speaking about the book in an LDS church setting. It is a controversial book, there's no doubt about that, but the authors seem to have done their homework. In fact, they're not really the only Mormon historians that talk about a lot of these issues. We'll find a lot of these stories peppered throughout other history books written by Mormon historians. But it is a fascinating story of early Mormonism, and we're still looking at Kirtland. Now, I know we ended yesterday's show by talking about how Joseph left Kirtland in quite a rush as a result of the Kirtland Bank failure and such like that. But the authors in Chapter 4 kind of go back and forth, and we're going to go back a little bit before the exodus from Kirtland to talk about the polygamy issue, because this is now at the time when the rumblings of polygamy are starting to surface. The two authors give the impression, and they have evidence to support this, that Joseph Smith was talking about plural marriage as early as 1831, even though it was never announced publicly during Joseph Smith's lifetime. It was always practiced. If it was practiced at all, it was practiced in secret. Smith, on numerous occasions, would lie to his wife, Emma, about these, well, we would call them affairs that he was having. Now, he's supposed to be a prophet, so he can say God told him to do this. And of course, many of his followers would go along with that. We have to emphasize, Emma never liked the doctrine of polygamy. She never liked it. In fact, she acts like it was never a part of Mormon history after Joseph dies in 1844. The church that she is a part of, the Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which was started after a great many of the saints had left the Nauvoo area for the Salt Lake Valley, they were denying that Smith even practiced polygamy for many years in its history. In fact, I was on a website just the other day by a member of the Community of Christ, it used to be called the RLDS, who was still denying that Joseph Smith ever practiced polygamy. I was amazed to read some of his evidence.
Well, even at the end of her life, Emma was denying that it took place for whatever reasons. I mean, we can speculate on those, but she even said that.
Well, it certainly is a bad chapter in Emma's life. There's no doubt about it. And as you were mentioning yesterday, the actions of a husband certainly do reflect on the spouse. And you have to sympathize with what Emma had to go through because of some of the things that Joseph Smith not only said, but some of the things that he actually did. We're looking at page 64, and it tells this little story about Warren Cowdery, who stayed with Emma and Joseph for 5 years, and how they went fishing, and it's a nice little story. But then all of a sudden, the next paragraph, what does it say?
The pleasant aspects of Emma's life, however, were being overshadowed by rumors that Joseph had an unconventional view of marriage. His and Emma's abrupt departure from harmony in 1830 may have been because her cousin, Hyle Lewis, accused Joseph of improper conduct with women.
Now, we do know that they left harmony mainly because they didn't get, well, I should say, Joseph didn't get along with his father-in-law. Mm-hmm. It sounds like Isaac tried to a certain extent to get along with him, though he never liked Joseph Smith's involvement in money digging and things like that. So they leave Harmony and they go to Palmyra. And now we're going to get in this part of history where it says in the next paragraph, Joseph's ideas about changes in marital practices came during a season of unprecedented religious activity. By the time he left the Johnson home in 1832, he had received more than half of the revelations that would eventually appear in print. Now, we need to explain who is this Johnson and the home that they are staying at. Well, John Johnson had a farm that was south of Kirtland. The church owns the property to this day. You can actually go and visit it. It's kind of like a visitor center, I guess. And you can actually go see where they lived for that particular time. But there was an interesting story that they recount on page 65 about what happened during this time when they were at the Johnson home. And let me just read it, because it says, within 6 months of Joseph's conversation with Mary Elizabeth Rollins. Now, Mary Elizabeth Rollins is introduced in the paragraph before. They kind of, boy, we're jumping all over the place. And I hope this doesn't become too confusing for our listeners. But it says that he, Joseph Smith, and Emma moved into the John Johnson home. Orson Pratt later quoted Lyman Johnson as saying that Joseph had made known to him as early as 1831 that plural marriage was a correct principle, but remarked also that the time had not yet come to teach and practice it. Now, this is interesting because he may not be teaching it publicly, but we certainly do get the impression he's practicing this. Mm-hmm. Why are these rumors flying around? Obviously, something is either being heard or seen or what. So this is starting to become a problem for Joseph Smith. It goes on in this paragraph to say, perhaps Joseph was not discreet in his discussions about plural marriage because rumor and insinuation fed the fury of the mob that tarred and feathered him. When the Johnson boys joined the mob that entered their own home, they clearly suspected an improper association between Joseph and their 16-year-old sister, Nancy Miranda. Now, a lot has been said about this. Todd Compton talks about this in his book, Sacred Loneliness, and a lot of Mormon historians talk about this. Joseph Smith was actually tarred and feathered, and there's the story of a doctor that was actually called upon to castrate Joseph Smith. Why would they want to do that to him?
You only would want to do that if there was something sexual involved.
Yeah, some sexual impropriety. Normally, you don't castrate people because they're a thief or because they taught a false doctrine or they did something wrong in some other area of life. But castration usually is something that you would see done to a person who had sexual problems. And fortunately for Joseph Smith, the doctor, according to various historical accounts, decided at the last minute that he was not going to do that. But this is Joseph Smith, who's a married man, who is hitting on, from what they believed, was their 16-year-old sister, Nancy Miranda. Now, we're going to have to go back again to the other page, page 64. It goes on in the paragraph that I was reading previously, where it says, the Book of Mormon provided only vague references to the Lord's acceptance of plural wives, but hinted of acceptance by stating, for I will, saith the Lord of hosts, raise up seed unto me, I will command my people, otherwise they shall hearken unto these things. That's a quotation from Jacob 2 in the Book of Mormon. It's really the only exception to the rule for anyone to practice plural marriage.
Raising up seed.
And for some reason, we don't know what it would be, but if God felt it necessary to increase the population, he would reverse his position on the practice of plural marriage. Because Jacob 2 in the Book of Mormon, if you read it, it's a very strong prohibition against the practice of plural marriage.
That's exactly
the
right.
The only exception was raising up seed. Now, why God would need to do that, and what event would happen in Mormon history that would make that necessary, we know of none.
Well, we have to also understand that the official declaration doesn't come about until D&C 132. That's written in 1843. We're talking 1831 here. And Joseph Smith does not have God telling him this. He does not have the authority of the church voting for this. I'd like to really quickly, Bill, read on page 65 about Mary Elizabeth Rollins that you had mentioned earlier. Mary Elizabeth Rollins claimed that Joseph had a private conversation with her in 1831. She was then 12 years old. She said Joseph, quote, told me about his great vision concerning me. He said I was the first woman God commanded him to take as a plural wife, end quote. Although she did not become a plural wife of Joseph until a number of years later, that early conversation planted a seed that Mary Elizabeth long remembered. I have a problem with this, because
you
here
should.
He's telling a 12-year-old girl that he would be marrying her someday. She'd be the first woman. And, you know, I mean, this is way out of sorts. And especially, let's just say it's okay that you can tell a 12-year-old girl that. Where does he have the authority from God or from his church to vote on this to be able to say that he could even start it?
Well, again, it goes back to it's Joseph Smith, and he can do whatever he wants, and most Mormons will not question it.
And that's not good enough.
Well,
that can't be good enough.
But I think you raise a good issue here. This is 1831. He's been married to Emma since early 1827. So he's a married man talking to a 12-year-old, telling her that she is going to become, what, one of his plural wives.
What do we call that today?
If Joseph Smith lived today, a man who's talking like this to young girls, 12-year-old girls, that's a sexual predator. Now, I know those are hard words, especially for a Mormon to try and put their head around, but really, this is the way he's behaving.
Well, if you notice on the TV, they've had, I don't know if it's Dateline or which news organization, and they set these up every once in a while, where these young girls are on the internet and these older men come, and they're embarrassed. The host comes out and interviews them, and how embarrassing. He goes to jail. What about back then? Was it wrong back then? I would have to say absolutely.
Absolutely, it was wrong. Well, of course it was wrong. Even just by the incident at the Johnson farm, Joseph Smith being tarred and feathered, and the potential of him being castrated by this doctor who backs off at the last minute. Of course they knew about this. These rumors are starting to go around. Imagine how this is affecting Emma. To have your husband accused of things like this, what does that do for a wife? That's got to be a horrible situation.
She must not think that she's adequate. 4 years into the marriage, he's talking to young girls like this.
Yeah, it's as bad as when you have a husband looking at porn. What does that do to the wife? I mean, that's horrible. It's a horrible sin. Yet we find Joseph Smith, obviously, is doing something, saying something, that is giving the impression that plural marriage is going on, and this is an accusation that's being made against the Mormons.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. As with most Christian organizations, Mormonism Research Ministry depends on the generous financial support of friends like you. If you like what we do and how we do it, would you consider helping MRM meet its financial obligations? Merely go to our website, mrm.org. At the right, you'll see a donate button. Click there and follow the instructions. MRM is a Christian nonprofit 501c3 organization, and your gifts are tax deductible. Not only that, they are greatly appreciated. Thank you for your support of this ministry.